We're holding page 144 in Bava Basra, the fifth line, middle of Os Nun Gimel. Continuing with Rav Baba Chana's stories, the Amar Rav Baba, so we're in the middle of a few where he says that he was on board a ship and he experienced and saw certain things. The first one we had two. We had one where there was a giant fish that had been killed by a parasite that got into its nose and was washed up on the sea. There was one that had sand on its back and we thought it was an island. And now he continues with another story. One time we were traveling on a ship. The ship was traveling between one fin of a fish, and it was traveling for 3 days and three nights. That ship was traveling just between the fins of this fish. Don't think the ship is going in the same direction as the fish, and therefore, like it's staying still relative to the fish. No, ihu b'skifa v'anan b'shipola. The fish is going against the wind; is swimming upstream, and we were going downstream, or downwind. It's really the same thing. Rashbam points out in the sea, what moves the water is only the wind. So therefore, so you can't really talk about it in the sea. You can't really talk about a current. So there would go. So the fish was swimming against the wind, against the waves, and we're going with the waves downwind. And still, it took us that long to pass between one fin and the next. You're going to say, okay, it was a slow ship. It wasn't moving very fast. No. He also said, when Reb Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he backed up Rabbi Baba Chana's story, and he said, "Kamecham kumusa demaya." In the amount of time that it takes to heat up a kettle of water, maskia shisin parasi, that ship was able to travel 60 parasa. 60 parasa again, as we've been having throughout the Sylvia, is 2 or 3 miles, so you're talking somewhere around 130 miles, give or take. The shoddy parasha gira, and in fact, even a horseman would shoot an arrow, the kadmalei ihu, and yet the ship would outrace the outrace the arrow. So the ship is going plenty fast, and still it took it 3 days and three nights going in the opposite direction of the fish to traverse between one fin and the other. The Amr of Ashi, so Rav Ashi points out, Hahu Gildana de Yamahavoi. That must have been a Gildana of the sea. A Gildana, Rashbam explains, is a species of small fish. The Isfai Tre Shitsi, that type of fish has two fins. Most fish have one fin that runs the length of their back. Here, Rav Labachana is describing that it took 3 days to travel from one fin to another. So you have to look for a kind of fish that has two fins, one at each end, and that would be the Gildana. So in other words, this is one of the smaller creatures in the sea yet. Imagine the much bigger ones. The Hakoisev brings over here from the Ritva. First of all, you have a Loshana Pasuk in Kehelas, loy lakalim ameirutz, loy lachachamim lechem, etc. Not always the swift, you would think, but derech hateva, the faster runner is always going to win the race, but that, it's not like that. The Eibishter runs the world, and sometimes the unexpected happens. So here, one lesson we can learn from this story, says that Ritva, is exactly that. You think such a fast-moving ship, it ought to be able to go really fast and get anywhere it wants really quickly, but you see, and it's outracing even a shot arrow, etc., and yet you see that the fish is bigger than it and goes faster than it. Sometimes, in other words, a person has an extra special mazel more than what you would expect. Then the Ritva goes on to say that the fins over here represent various kings, various Goyish rulers. So another, and the ship then would rep the ship and the passengers on it would represent great tzaddikim. So B'derech HaTeva, again, the tzaddikim ought to be immune to the fins, to the power of those governments. Nevertheless, we find like L'Hasor Arugim Malchus, Tach Olam Machshav Lefonai, the Eibishter decides, and sometimes the tzaddikim end up getting caught up and not being able to bypass the fins. Mausha says that particularly this is like the previous stories which Mausha had explained, actually refers specifically to the story of Purim. Mausha says this one also symbolizes the details of the story of Purim. So we're in Mazel Adar being the mazel of dogim, of fish. The two fins, first of all, the fins cut through the water. So therefore, they represent cutting off, they represent destruction, and the word shiksa itself is actually comes from an Aramaic word that means destruction. So therefore, it means, in other words, there's going to be two destructions. Somebody is going to end up being destroyed over here, either Haman and company or Chas v'Shalom, the opposite. So what's going to happen? So we're going for 3 days and three nights in this danger between one fin and another, the three days and three nights that they were fasting in the Megillah. And during all that time, Ehud b'Skifa, Haman is going up. Skifa literally means going up. He's going higher. He's getting higher and higher in his position. And we seem to be going lower and lower. But in the end, what happened? Skifa also means being hanged up high. So that's in the end. He ended up with Skifa. He ended up being hanged, and we were saved. We were lower down. We remained remorchai, remained down on the ground, and not being strung up on the gallows. So therefore, this story also represents, in other words, the tremendous danger that the Jewish people were in during those 3 days, and how the Eibishter got us out of that. And after all, the tzaddik Mordechai ends up getting away safely from the fins. And who has the shitza, who has the destruction, is Amalek and company rather than us, Chas v'Shalom. I've seen it pointed out, you know, when you get down to it, I mean, if it hadn't been that way, Chas v'Shalom, I mean, imagine, for example, let's say, I mean, do we have a Yom Tov celebrating the day that Hitler, Yimach Shemo, committed suicide? It's a good thing he did, but what happened before it, you know? Imagine if it hadn't been that they did tshuva and listened to what Mordechai had said, then we wouldn't have a Purim. Instead, you know, it would be fine. Haman eventually got hanged, but look what happened, look what had to happen before that. There's a few other explanations. Among them is that one that the fish represents a Rebbe who's teaching Torah, and the two fins represent the two aspects of Torah, Nigla and Nister. So we're trying to get the ship get to the second fin to understand Sodas HaTorah. And meanwhile, everybody else, we said, as a kettle is heating up, meanwhile the ship is traveling really fast, representing other people are busy spending time eating and drinking. Meanwhile, the Talmud Chacham is racing as fast as he can to get to the second fin. But even so, he may not reach his destination, but nevertheless, Loyata Ben Choron, Libata Rimana, the journey itself is worthwhile. And when we said, when Rav Ashi points out that it was a gildena, which is a small fish, meaning we're not even necessarily talking about a top-level Talmud Chacham, we're talking about a relatively small one. But, in other words, you have to put in as much effort as possible, and the Eibishter will take it from there and give you success in what you're trying to accomplish. Next, V'omer Rav Abachana, Zimna Chod Hava Azlinen B'Sfinta, another time we were traveling in a ship, V'chazoi, or V'chazinon, V'chazoi means I saw, V'chazinon means we saw, Hahitzi Pauta, a bird, to have a koi, or Dekoyim, Ad Kausule B'maya. It was standing in the water up to its ankles, V'reshe V'rekia, and its head was up in the sky. So we thought to ourselves, if it's only up to its ankles in the water, less Maya, there must not be very much water over here. Nechus, let's go down. Let's go for a swim. Or the Gersa in the printed Gemara, but in the Nechus, we wanted to go down, La'akurinashin, to cool ourselves off, to go for a nice, refreshing swim. The Nofak Baskola, but a Basko came out, the Omrulon, and told us, Loiti Chisu Lahocha, don't try to go down over here. The Nofla the Chatsina, or Chatsitsa, the Bar Nagra Hocha, because a carpenter has dropped his axe over here, Hosheva Shmin. 7 years already, 7 years ago, he dropped his axe, the Lamathula Ara, and hasn't yet reached the bottom of this, water. The Lab Mishum, the Nefishi Maya, it's not because the water is so deep. El Mishum Diridifi Maya. The reason is because the current goes so fast that it's not allowing this, that it's not allowing the axe to sink. So in other words, if you can we turn this off, please? Thank you. So El Mishum Diridifi Maya, because the current is so fast that therefore, so now the axe can't sink. Now, Rashbam says it doesn't mean that it's not deep as well. It just means it's more than just that it's deep. It's also that the current is so fast. So Rav Ashi says, you want to know what kind of bird that was? This is the creature called Ziz Sodai Dichtiv, as it says in a pasuk in Tilim, the Ziz Sodai Imadi. Hashem says, the Ziz Sodai is with me. In the simple sense, Mephoshim on the pasuk explains Ziz Sodai means the creatures of the field, but here the Gemara is understanding that Ziz Sodai is a particular kind of bird, namely this one whose head was up in the heavens. It's brought, by the way, there's at least one medrash that says, the same way as we all know about the Leviathan and the Shur Abur, the Gemara is going to mention them later on in the Sugya, talk about them, about their qualities and how they're going to be served as by the famous Suda, by the Tzaddikim Law of Lover. There's a medrash that says that the Ziz Sodai, in a similar sense, is a gigantic bird. It's brought, the medrash brings up, like, it can block the sun, it can block the sun's light with its wings, and that it also will be served by the Suda for the Tzaddikim Law of Lover. So in other words, there'll be representatives of all the various types of animal life that we're able to eat. There's a shirt abur for the land animals, the leviathan for the sea creatures, and the ziz sodai for the birds. Ritvas says over here that the vort is, this bird represents the, he says, Boruhu. It's very clear that it refers to the Jewish people. Now, what does that mean? We're stuck in the water water of Golos, in the Shibud Golios. We're being ruled over and harassed and everything by the nations. Nevertheless, we're still Osik Batorda. That represents, in other words, that the head is in the clouds. But then sometimes we may think to ourselves, you know what, then we want to go down into that water. If the water represents the Goyim, then we want to go and enjoy them. We want to go and enjoy their company and enjoy living among them and whatever. And a Baskel has to warn us, don't, you're not going to come out of it well. A Jew's mixing with Goyim never ends well, in short. So there, in token of that, then in the story, we're saying the current is, the water is so deep and the current is so rapid, you're going to end up getting swept away. Marshall explains, and a number of other Mephoshim explain in similar veins, that the bird standing in the water and its head in the clouds represents the two aspects of Torah, Nigla and Nister. Torah can be compared to a bird. He explains in different ways based on different midrashim. So now you have, in other words, that the bird is standing in the water and it looks very shallow. It's only up to the bird's ankles. Meanwhile, its head is in Shemayim. So you're going to think. So a person is going to think a person is going to think that, you know what, there's not, Nigla is very easy, I can spend a little time on it, I can just swim around in it a little, and I'll be good. But then I can already focus on Nister. But we're being told, then I can already focus on Pnimiyas HaTorah. But we're being told that, no, a Talmid Chacham, who's... that a Talmid Chacham who's compared in other Gemaras to a carpenter already has had, you should know there was a question in Nigla that he already had 7 years and he still hasn't gotten to the bottom of it. Not because it's so deep, but because it's so, the current is so rapid he can't really get to the bottom of it. Specifically, Marsha says, this refers to Yeshua. The Gemara tells us in Masechta Tmura that before Moshe passed away, he says to Yeshua, this is your last opportunity to ask me anything. If there's anything in Torah you don't fully understand, ask it to me now before it's too late. And Yeshua says, Moshe Rabbeinu, I've been learning by you constantly and diligently for 40 years. I don't have anything left to ask. And then Moshe passed away and Yeshua and the rest of the Jewish people forgot hundreds of halachas. So that means, so in other words, a person needs a Rebbe who will teach him pilpul. The Gemara explains in Nedarim that the concept of pilpul, the concept of being able to derive one thing from another in Torah, was given to Moshe Rabbeinu. He generously gave it over to the Jewish people, but now Yeshua missed the opportunity to get it, and therefore, so now he's not able to reconstruct the halachas. Later on, the Gemara says, Asniel ben Knaz was able to do that. That's represented over here. In other words, you think that Nigla is something fairly easy to deal with, but you should realize that, in fact, it's very, very deep, and you can have a Talmid Chacham, even of the caliber of Yeshua, who's never able to find, his axe again after he dropped it. So realize, in other words, that Nigla itself has tremendous profundity in it, tremendous depth in it, and don't think that it's just something you can swim around in a little, and that's that. So the Zohar in this connection also mentions something that the Zohar actually takes it the other way around. The water that this bird is standing in represents Pnimius HaTorah. Specifically, the Zohar relates it to, we know there's Abash and Nichnas Ulaparadis. Marshall mentions it over here also. You have the four great Chachamim who tried to enter higher Olamas, and three of them didn't make it through safely, and only Rabbi Akiva did. So that's the thing. It's so deep, and the current is so rapid that they can't really grasp it fully. And the bird itself, the Zohar says, represents Yisoid, represents Sfiras HaYisoid, which connects together heaven and earth. Therefore, in token of that, it's standing in the water, and its head reaches up to the heavens. So the Kli Yoker in Olos Ephraim adds that also specifically that this bird, the Ziz Sodai, represents the Malchus of Hashem. So it's very deep to understand. In other words, and in fact, the word Ziz, he says, is related to the word to move, Lozuz, to move. But people are apt to think that Hashem's kingdom moves, in other words, in the sense that we can understand the details of how Hashem runs the world, but we can't, even though the whole concept of Tzimtzum is really beyond us to understand. And therefore, in token of that, we're saying again that the current is very, 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 very rapid, and there's only a limit, there's a limit how much you can understand. So various other Mephoshim talk about different other angles of this, that again, the water versus the sky represents different aspects of Torah. A person thinks to himself, I can easily grasp the one, or I can easily grasp the other, and we're being told it's not so simple. With that said, of course, there is the idea that Rebbe stresses in a sicha, a person should not think to himself that, you know what, I'm not great enough to be learning Pnimius HaTorah yet. There's no such thing. Nowadays, a mitzvah mutter, a mitzvah legalis, there's a chachma, so a person has the responsibility to learn Pnimius HaTorah as well, to learn it through Torah Sachsidus, which illuminates Torah. He shouldn't think to himself that it's too deep for me, but he should realize to put it into, to keep it in its proper place. There's also different understandings as well. There's an understanding from Emes Yaakov that this is the bird over here actually refers to an apikoros. So you think that he thinks of himself as very smart. He thinks his head is in the sky, and you think, well, he's only standing in shallow water. It should be easy to debate him and show him where he's wrong. But we're being told, no, a great Talmud Chacham, like Rav Marashal says, a carpenter represents a Talmud Chacham, already tried it. In 7 years, he's working on the guy and he's not getting anywhere. Because the current is so rapid, as in the guy is constantly coming up with new ideas and new excuses and whatnot, and you're not going to get anywhere with him. He changes the subject, v'chol, yeah. Next. Now, the next few stories is going to be Rav Rav Chana traveling in the desert. Now that we have, first we have stories that he was told by seafarers, then we had just some that he himself saw, the Pashtos on land, then he has ones that he saw when he was in a ship, now he has things that he sees in the desert. There's a medrash someplace that mentions that Tosfos brings it in Pesachim, I think, that the world is divided into one-third cultivated land, one-third desert, and one-third seas. We don't mean not proportionally, because the oceans cover like 70% of the Earth's surface, but in other words, if you divide the Earth in general into three areas, you can divide it that way. So now that he's had stories in two of them, now he has several stories set in the Midbar. One time we were traveling in the desert, we saw some geese, they were so fat that their feathers were falling out. And rivers of oil from the melted fat are flowing underneath them. So I asked them, Is limi naichu or lon mi gabaichu, chelka la alma de osi? Will I have limi, well, is limi naichu means will I have of you, or is lon mi gabaichu means will we, all of us who are traveling over here, have from among you, chelka la alma de osi, a portion in olam haba? Are we going to get your fatty meat in olam haba? Choda dalya li atma, one of them in response lifted up its thigh, as if to say, that will be the part that you're going to get to eat. V'choda dalya li gadfa, another one picked up its wing, representing that will be your portion. And Rabbi Machana says, Ki asoi l'chamed Rabbi Lazar, when I came and told Rabbi Lazar, who was the Rosh Hashiva in Eretz Yisrael, Omali, he says to me, Asidin Yisrael litin aleinu sadin. In the future, when Mashiach comes, the Jewish people are going to have to give an accounting for the fact, because Rashbam says, because of the averus of the Jewish people, Mashiach is getting delayed. Meanwhile, these poor geese are suffering parshat tzar ba'al chayim. They're so fat, and their feathers are falling out. So if Mashiach would come faster, then these geese would already be shechted, and they wouldn't be living this difficult existence. And therefore, the Jewish people are going to be held to account for the fact that Mashiach is delayed because of our avos. The mitzvah says that the geese over here represent the kingdoms of Edom and Yishmael, so the Christian and Muslim powers. In the future, they're going to be, when Rabbi Abachana is asking, are we going to have a reward for you in Lost Love, as we know, those nations are going to, as the Navi famously says, that Hashem is going to make them, Likre Kulam B'Shem HaZepachalam Safa Grura, Likre Kulam B'Shem Hashem, they'll all call in the name of Hashem, they'll all recognize the falsity of their religions, La'avdei Shem Echad, and they'll serve Hashem shoulder to shoulder. But now, so in other words, there's going to come a time that when they're going to do tshuva, and as Rambam puts it at the end of Hilchos Malachim, they're going to realize that we now understand that the ways in which we heard about the concept of Mashiach and the concept of Torah and so forth was a distorted one, and now we realize the truth. So now, then Rabbi Lazar is saying, Asidin Yisrael, Litin Alayin Sadin, the fact that the Geula is delayed, because of our avodas, means that the ultimate tshuva of those nations is also being delayed. So therefore, I sit in Litin Alayin Sadin. So therefore, we're going to have to give account before the Eidoshter. Why did we allow that delay? Why did we make it that those nations are not doing tshuva faster? That's the ritual says that the meaning of the story. Maharsha says like this. We find that the Navi Yechezkel describes how there's going to come a stage of Golos that's called Midbar Ha'amim. The Pasuk describes over there how Hashem is going to, when it comes time for the Geula, the Eibishter is going to bring us through Midbar Ha'amim, the desert of the nations. And actually, on the Pesukim over there explains that the desert of the nations, in the simple sense, means the desert through which the Jewish people passed through in the 40 years after Yitzhak's time. It's called the desert of the nations because several nations, countries border it. Near it, you have Edom and Mitzrayim on one side, and Edom and Moab and Ammon on the other side, so it's called Midbar Ha'amim. And there, the Pasuk describes how Hashem is going to put the Jewish people through a purifying experience where what's going to be left, the ones who are going to be left after that, are the Jews who deserve to come to the Gula Mitzvah Shlema. By now, we've been through plenty such Midbaris. Anyway, Maharsha says that this story over here is also referring to that. So like this, Maharsha explains, the Gemara tells us in Brachas that geese represent the Chochmah of Torah. Geese make loud honking noises, and the same with Chochmah Smachutz Torahina, as the Pasuk says, Chochmah of Torah calls out in the outside, in the streets, come learn Torah. So he gives other examples of it from different Gemaras. So now, like this, then he's saying that there's gonna come a point when Chochmah of Torah is gonna tremendously increase. Kikolam Yedu Oisim the Matanim Magdolim, as the Pasuk says, we're gonna go in the Midbar like the Jewish people went in the Midbar after Yitzhak Mitzrayim, and there we're going to gain tremendous amounts of Chochmah of Torah. Hashem is going to give us over there these geese to eat, like the slav in the Midbar, which were also tremendously fat. So now when we have the rivers of oil, fat that's flowing underneath them, says Maharsha, that refers to the tremendous tainug that a person has from learning these concepts of Torah. So now Rabbi Babachana says, do I also deserve to enjoy some of that ruchnius? So one of them lifts up his leg, and the other one lifts up its wing, which are those correspond in a person to the leg and the arm respectively. As in doing loya medrash iker ala ma'ase, it's not enough just to sit and learn Torah. You got to be doing ma'ase and tovim. So one of them is hinting to him, make sure that you're walking with your feet to go on the right paths. And the other one lifts up his wing, make sure that you're using your hands for mice and tovin. So now, when he comes to Rabbi Lazar says, Asidin Yisrael, Litin Alein Sadin, because there are going to be Jews at that time who are not necessarily deserving of Geula. Those are the ones that Yechezkel says on them. Hashem says, I'm going to winnow out from you the ones, the rebellious ones. So now, in other words, but they're still eating of these geese, metaphorically. They're still enjoying the Schachma of Torah, and they're going to have to be. Marsha says, Asidin Lifton Asadin, how is it that they enjoyed that tremendous Schachma of Torah, and they didn't make themselves deserving of being able to have it and being able to come to the Geula? That's how Marsha explains the story. You have a couple of other Mephoshim talk about angles on it as well, that what it means is, in other words, sometimes you can have a Talmud Chacham, for example. He himself has tremendous ability to learn Torah, but his feathers are falling out because of the fat, representing, in other words, that he's not just spending time learning Torah himself. He is. He's putting out a lot of his time towards teaching people who are on a lower level than him, and going out and doing mitzvahim and doing other such things. That's represented by the fat dripping underneath him and the feathers falling out. So Rav Avachana says, am I going to deserve to have a portion of you? And basically they answer him, you have to do the same kind of thing. Don't keep your fat inside, your fat of Torah. Make sure that you're going and sharing it with the world. Make sure you're going and teaching and helping the Yidden who are not yet on your level. And then you'll have to be zoicha to eat from us. So, in fact, in that connection, we can consider all Rebbe. You know, you look sometime in Igros Kodesh, the first couple of volumes of Igros Kodesh before the Rebbe accepted the Nesius. And you have these amazing long letters where the Rebbe goes through tremendous Pilpulim and Torah and being Mechadish Chidushim right and left. And then after Tufshin Yod, all of a sudden, it changes over the years, and the Rebbe is dealing with all the individual details that every chassid needs from him. So you consider then, in that sense, the Rebbe is like what we're describing over here. He could have stayed and continued to just learn for himself and reach unimaginable heights in Torah, and instead the Rebbe basically gave himself over with Mesiras Nefesh to us to be able to guide us and lead us and to be able to answer everybody's picayune questions about troubles that they're having in their life and so forth. So that's the, in other words, he's not allowing to put it in terms of the metaphor. He's let his feathers fall out, let his fat be going all over the ground. Another Yid will be able to benefit from it. The Alter Rebbe, actually, this is one of the rare stories over here where we actually have an explanation on it. The Alter Rebbe also, and in the Kodesh Torah, explains that the geese over here also, like Marashah says, represent Chochma. And you have to bring it down into the Midbar. In fact, there's in Perek Shira, where it talks about the songs of all the different creatures in the world, it mentions over there the wild goose that wanders around in the desert, and its song is Bamidbar Panu Derech Hashem, in the desert, clear the road for Hashem. So that's these geese in the desert represent this Chochmei law that we have to bring it down even to the deserts of this world. Then the Alter Rebbe goes on to explain that there's also the fact of them also represents a bittul that has to go along with Chochma. It can't just be Chochma of Torah. It has to be, there has to go a bittul along with it as well. And the feathers falling out is that nowadays, how do we get the Ibishtas Chochmei law? Is it's very mitzumtzum. It's often compared in Kabbalah to hairs. You have like a hair has a tiny little bit of chayus in it compared to the person, and the ashpa that we get in Milamila is compared to like coming through hairs. Here, the feathers falling out represents that there's going to come a time when we don't need the hairs / feathers. We can get Chochmei law directly from the Ibishtas. And then at that point, even the wings, we say over here, the one lifts up its wings, wings, as the Alter Rebbe tells us in Tanya, represent Av of a Yira. They're like wings of a bird that allow it to fly up to Shemayim. At that point, everything will be bottled to other course, even Ava and Yira. That's how Alter Rebbe explains this story in that vein. Then you have the Oilos Ephraim gives an explanation like this. He says, Fakir, the geese represent the Jews who are not such Bali Maisim. But they have their fat, they have all their gashmias tikkatavis, and their feathers have fallen out, representing that they're bare of mitzvahs. A person that a bird is supposed to have feathers, a yid is supposed to have clothing of mitzvahs, particularly tzedakah. And they have rivers of oil flowing from underneath them, meaning that we see that they're very rich and successful in this world. So Rav Avachana says to them, you know, I'm asking, do I have a share of you, lost lover? Meaning, in other words, do you maybe have, you have to have some schosim that the Eibishter should have given you such wealth, can I maybe join with you in a Yisachos Vulin partnership? So one of them So one of them lifts up its thigh, representing that it has a mitzvah, bris milah, and the other one lifts up its wing as if to say that I do have that I put on tefillin and I don't do work on Shabbos. So in other words, even these poshut Jews, even these kal shemakalim, they still have these basic mitzvahs that they hold on to. What we're saying, ultimately, Rabbi Lazar is saying, Asidim Lutin Lai Sadin. So what are we doing? You have these Jews who we should be working on them to bring them closer to full tshuva, that they're not just doing these bare few mitzvahs, but they're doing a lot more. Why are we not working on them? Next. V'omer Rav Rabbi Chana, Zimna Chada Havaka Azlunin B'Mambara. One time we were traveling in the desert. The Islavi Bahadon Fahu Tayyar. They came and joined along with us a Tayyar, an Arab merchant. To have a shokel afra, he would take some of the dust, umurachle, and he would sniff it, the omar, and he would say, based on what he sniffed, ha uchel aduch the plan, ha uchel aduch the plan. This road goes to this place, and that road goes to that place. We find it's brought about the chivi yoshvei aretz. The pasuk says the pasuk describes in Parshas Vayishlach, Eilu b'nei Seir, not chivi, chori, rather, Eilu b'nei Seir, chori, yoshvei aretz, the original inhabitants of Har Seir, who b'nei Esav conquered the area, and killed or threw most of them out, but also intermarried with them, b'chola, and the pasuk calls them Yoshvei Haaretz. The Gemara explains, Rashi brings it on the pasuk, that they were experts at cultivating the earth, and they could smell it and be able to know from smelling the earth what kind of crops are good to grow there. It's mentioned in Targum on Tehillos that Shlomo HaMelech had that ability as well. He planted in Yerushalayim, the pasuk says, he planted an orchard with many different kinds of trees. The Targum explains over there that he was able to detect every vein of earth that comes from a certain place in the world where certain kinds of plants and crops and whatever grow, and recognize where particularly in Yerushalayim that vein leads to, and then he would plant that kind of crop over there, so that he was able to grow all kinds of tropical fruits, for example, that don't normally grow in the climate of Yerushalayim. So here, this Arab had that ability as well to be able to sniff the dirt and be able to tell which road goes where. Amrinanle, so we asked him, how far away are we from the nearest water source? He tells us, Hovali Afra, give me some of the dirt. Yahvin and Lay, we gave him some of the dirt. Amalan, and he tells us to Mrachkin, Amalan Tmanya Parsi. He tells us we're still 8 parsa away from the next place where we'll find water. Taninan Vyavin and Lay, later on we tried again as we're going further along. We again gave him a sample of the earth, and he sniffed it again. Amalan, he tells us to Mrachkin and Tlosa Parsi. Now we're 3 parsa away. Afchislay, we tried mixing it up for him. We tried mixing up different samples and pretending that one is the other. Veloyachelislay, but we couldn't stump him. He always knew exactly how far we are from the water and the other details like that he could tell by sniffing it. So you have several stories over here involving this Tayyar, this Arab merchant. So, to start with then, so Ritva says that it means that Ritva says there is a natural phenomenon. There is, like we said, just said about Shlomo, there is the, and like the Bnei Achori, there is an ability to be able to sniff the earth, to be able to sniff a patch of earth and be able to tell something about its composition and what it's good for and so forth. So therefore, we don't have to say that was the Derech Nes like some of the other ones over here. Nevertheless, says Ritva, there's a muscle in it as well, that it means that the Gemara tells us, Hashom or Chosav, a person has to constantly be evaluating his ways, as the Rambam puts it in Hilchos Deis, a person always has to be evaluating, am I on the middle line as far as this midah, or if I have to go to one side or the other, am I always where I'm supposed to be, and constantly being evaluating and making a cheshbon hanefesh. So therefore, Ritva says, that's represented in this story over here, where this guy is constantly aware where he is relative to the water and relative to anything else. He's Hashom or Chosav, he's really keeping an eye on where he is and where he's going. Which is a lesson for us. Marshall points out that if the Tayyar is exactly that, an Arab merchant, you have to ask, we're going to have several stories of Rav Rav Chana where this Tayyar, together with him, sees amazing things. They see the Mesa Midbar, they see Har Sinai, and they hear a box full over there. How comes it that this guy, after that, doesn't become a ger after all that? And several other questions. So Marshall explains like this. This Tayyar over here, this Arab merchant, actually represents a... So first of all, he's going in the desert, meaning he's going on his burden. So he wants to be alone for a while, to be alone with himself, and then make himself an honest cheshbon anefesh, and be alone with the Eibishter. Then he meets up with a Tayyar, which is a great Talmud Chacham. So the Moshel has him that he's a great Chacham in nature. And he's able to sniff the dirt. But it really represents, in other words, that he's great in Chochmah of Torah. He actually has the quality of Mashiach, it says on Mashiach, V'harichoy b'yiras Hashem, the Mashiach will be able to sniff a person and be able to tell what his level of Yiras Shemayim is. So this guy, in other words, he says, so it starts with like this. First we say, how far are we? That means, in other words, we're asking this Talmud Chacham, how far are we away from reaching that level of Mashiach? So at first the guy answers 8 parasa, representing, in other words, right now we have those 7 qualities that a Dayan has to have. As we know, Yisrael tells Moshe Rabbeinu, you have to find Anshe Chayu, Yirei Elokim, Anshe Emes, etc., 7 qualities. Plus, also you have, Mashiach is going to have the 8th quality of being able to sniff V'aricha V'yiras Hashem. So right now, we're still 8 away from that. We still have a ways to go, in other words. We have to work on being able to achieve all those 8. Later on, So we have 8 levels to go. Taninan, it would in Rabbi Abachana's story, means we repeated, but it also means we learned, like Tanya. So we learned some more, we studied Torah, and eventually we asked him again. Now he told us that we're still only three away. At this point, you've already achieved 5 of them through your learning Torah, but you still have 3 more to go. So when he says apchislei, we mixed it up, means hafochba b'hafochba, we're delving over and turning over the Torah and learning more and more, and we still couldn't reach it, we still couldn't achieve those last few levels to come to his madrega. Or the other possibility is also that it means exactly that. We tried to mix him up, but still he had that sense of smell, that ruchnis sense of smell, and therefore he's able to see through all of it and be able to realize where we really are holding. The Rebbe's father, Rebbe Levi Yitzchak, has an explanation on it that first he has a whole explanation that in Kabbalah it talks about that Leah and Rachel represent, Leah represents Bina, Rachel represents Malchus. It's a whole thing that's brought in many different places in Sifrei Kabbalah and in a few places in Chassidus, and Rebbe Levi brings it a lot so now when you look at the 2 good Meraglim, Kolev and Yeshua. Kolev from Shevet Yehuda means he's descended from Leah. And he explains that the Alpi Kabbalah, Leah, representing Bina, is represented by the number of 8. And then he explains that Yeshua, who comes from Rachel, who comes from Shevet Ephraim, which in turn comes from Rachel, is represented by the number 3. So that when we meet up with this Tayyar and we ask him how far are we, at first he tells us that we're on the level of we've gotten to the level of Kolev, and then further on we've gotten to the level of Yeshua. Rabbi Lezik mentions he has a whole shema on it that gives further details, but unfortunately that hasn't come down to us, so we just have this little bare hint that he gives in a different place, incidentally.
Somewhere it says that Tayyar is usually Yahyahu HaNavi.
I think it's brought the possibility that the Tayyar represents Eliyahu HaNavi. Yes, so here Maharsho is saying it's a Talmud Chacham on the level of Mashiach, so yeah, that would fit with it very nicely. Eitz Yosef says another vort on it as well. He says Faker, that this Arab merchant is the Yetzihara, and he's the great businessman because he always has plenty of wares to try to sell, plenty of things to try to sell people on. So now what happens is that he would take dirt representing a person, because a person is made from dirt, and smell him, see what kind of person he is, and tell him, he would tell him, this way, this is the way you can go to reach this way, to Gan Eden, versus this is the way you can go to reach Gehenna. So then we ask him, how far away are we from the water? Water represents chesed, so it represents the middah of Avraham Avinu. Because after all, Chazal tell us, in every generation, there are at least 30 tzaddikim of the caliber of Avraham Avinu. So he tells us that we're eight parasa away in the sense you have the famous braisa of Pinchas Ben Yair that talks about eight levels in midas tovus that a person has to go through. Zehirus, then zri'im, which brings to zrizus, which brings to nikius, etc. The famous Musa say from Mesilas Yesharim is based on that braisa. So you still have eight levels to go. Then later on, and we started working on it. Later on, he tells us he still has three miles to go, similar to what Maharal Shah says. But then, après cela, when we turned ourselves a little bit away from it, we're figuring, you know what, we give up. We can't go any further. Now we can't stand up against him. Now, instead, he shows his true colors as the Yetzer Hara and starts trying to dominate us. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola. Zayin Adar Aleph, it's Yoritzai to Moshe Rabbeinu. Chazal tell us that by the Geula Asid, Moshe Rabbeinu will come into Eretz Yisrael and will lead with him the whole Dor HaMidbar. So that means, in other words, now we think of it, the true Geula is that not one Yid, no Yid will be left behind. You have a Pasuk, although V'loi Oysa Oyd Mehem Sham, the Pasuk says in Yechez, Hashem says, I won't leave one Yid behind. So therefore, that was, so the real Geula is only going to be by the Geula Asid. That means the real Geula was not by Mitzrayim, because after all, as it is, you have the whole 600,000 Jews who left Mitzrayim, almost none of them came into Eretz Yisrael. But when Mashiach comes, they will. So that will be really the true Geula that we didn't even have by Yetzias Mitzrayim. Mind you, there is a Gemara in Sanhedrin actually that says that by the Geula Hamitis Vashlema, as the Gemara has an expression over there, that only two out of every 600,000 Jews will make it in, which sounds very scary, but there are actually Mephoshim who explain that it means if you think of all the Jews who lived throughout all the centuries of Golos, of the ones who are going to be alive at the time when Mashiach comes are going to be two out of every 600,000, but then everybody else will come alive by Tzias Hamesim. For Zion Adar Beis, the land of Eretz Yisrael was divided among the Shvatim, and it was unequal portions because it was unequal portions depending on the size of the Shevet. So there it didn't give the details about how it's given out to the Shvatim at the beginning. Later on, in Parshas Matis Masei, it gives the details of the borders of Eretz Yisrael, but here it doesn't really say how it's going to be divided among the Shvatim. Later on, in Sefer Yehoshua, it explains what territory each Shevet got. But that's because, the Rebbe explains, because really the tzivui of dividing up Eretz Yisrael also includes the division in Yemos HaMashiach, when there's going to be more nations, because there's going to be 10 nations, not just 7, and it's going to be divided up. Also, Shevet Levi, Shaul Levi Echad, as the pasuk says, Shevet Levi is also going to receive a portion in Eretz Yisrael, which they never did before that. Okay. In Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch, we're beginning Siman Tes, which discusses what kinds of garments require tzitzis and what are potter from tzitzis. This was, by the way, the whole topic of tzitzis was in Daf HaYomi over the last few days. Now we're back to matters of korbanos. Okay, so like this. The pasuk says, V'nosnu al tzitzis hakonos psil techeva. So you should have a thread of techevas on every corner. Now, why hakonos? It says already earlier in the pasuk, V'oslam tzitzis al kanfe v'gdeyim. So what do we learn from the word hakonos? That means the tzitzis has to be made of the same kind of thing as the konos, as the corner of the garment. So that means if you have, for example, a silk talus, then it should have silk tzitzis. On the other hand, then there's another pasuk about tzitzis in Parshas Kisetzeh. It says gedilim tasa l'cha al arba kanfis ksuscha. It says you should make for yourself fringes on the four corners, and right before that it says don't wear shatnez semer pishtim yachta, wool and linen together, gedilim tasa l'cha, which implies that the gedilim, the tzitzis, have to be made dafka out of wool or linen. So what is it? On a silk talus, are you putting wool or linen tzitzis, or are you putting wool or linen tzitzis, or are you dafka putting silk? So the answer is, wool or linen tzitzis strings will patter any kind of material. On that it says, semel pishim dilim tasa l'cha. But tzitzis strings of other material will only patter if it's that kind of material. For example, silk tzitzis for a silk talus, or hemp tzitzis for a hemp talus. So in other words, if you have a silk talus, you have three choices of what kind of, midaraisa anyway, of what kind of strings to put on it. Wool, linen, or silk. With cotton tzitzis, the same thing, wool, linen, or cotton. And we'll go on the Alter Rebbe, we'll go on and talk about what the actual dinim are in practice nowadays that we don't have tchelis. Yeah.